It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Rachel Campos Duffy.
I'm David Asman, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, April 11th, 2024. I'm Dave Anthony. Inflation is creeping back up. There's concern about border security and abortion rights and wars overseas at an uneasy time before the election.
A lot of Americans feel good about themselves, and a lot of Americans feel good about their community or even their state, but they don't feel good about the rest of the country. And I don't know if I can recall a time where the data suggested that.
I'm Lisa Brady. A key intelligence tool might expire while lawmakers have a renewed debate about warrantless surveillance.
Intelligence threats like Chinese spying or an Al-Qaeda terrorist attack, that's not like fine wine getting better with age. We don't have days, weeks to wait for the process of a warrant.
And I'm Senator Rand Paul. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
He's confident he'll return to the White House.
I predict that November 5th will go down as the most important day in the history of our country. That's Election Day.
Former President Trump, after landing in Georgia for some big money fundraisers for his rematch with President Biden.
He's corrupt and he's incompetent. He can't put two sentences together. And I think we're going to have a tremendous victory.
He blames the president for record illegal immigration, wars in Gaza and Ukraine, and
the inflation is out of control, and now it's out of control again.
Reacting to Wednesday's report showing consumer prices rose last month more than expected, up 0.4%, and the annual rate of inflation in March continued its trend of rising back up.
But look, we have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%.
President Biden at a news conference next to Japan's prime minister.
We have a plan to deal with it, whereas the opposition, my opposition, talks about two things. They just want to cut taxes for the wealthy and raise taxes on other people.
But inflation's rise could keep interest rates from coming down.
The downward effect on that is that, in all likelihood, the Fed's not going to cut rates in the near term.
Bill Hemmer is co-anchor of America's Newsroom weekday mornings, 9 to 11 Eastern on the Fox News Channel.
I'm on record. I'll be honest with you. I said months ago that they're not going to cut rates this entire year.
They want to do several this year.
Yeah, and I'm thinking now, I'm no economist, but, you know, we got used to cheap money. You know, when interest rates were at 3%, even a little bit below 3%, that's like historically low numbers.
I refinanced my house around that.
Yeah, I think people came to expect that low rate. And, you know, you get the average range about 4 or 5%. I think we're closer to about 5% right now. So I think it's going to be really tricky for them to do it. The other thing I would look out for is, you know, you got Biden out there saying that Trump's a threat to democracy. And you had Trump in Georgia yesterday, and you had Eric Trump on Fox and Friends saying, how can my dad, I'm imitating him, be a threat to democracy when we got war in the Middle East, when we got war in Ukraine? What's the threat to democracy? And that's the moment they're going to ride for the next 7 months. But watch this summer to see whether or not you get a split screen on gas prices. If we go to $4 for most of America,
we're like $3.60 now.
Here's the point. If you're at $4 this summer and Trump's out there saying, I was at $1.79 or $1.89 or $1.99, that is a very interesting comparison and split screen that I think applies practically to every American.
You know, the president has said over and over again, he's had record job creation, unemployment historically low, under 4%. Inflation has come down, but he gets low marks on his handling of the economy over and over and over again. He can't seem to convince Americans that things are better. He thinks they are better, but he just can't convince people.
In a broad sense, you've heard that they don't talk about Bidenomics anymore. There's a reason for
that.
They don't want to touch that. Some of these surveys will show that a lot of Americans feel good about themselves, and a lot of Americans feel good about their community or even their state, but they don't feel good about the rest of the country. And I don't know if I can recall a time where the data suggested that. I don't know what that means in the end. You feel good about yourself, but not about everything else. Maybe these are headwinds from some of the bigger stories that are happening around the world. An unsettled planet, I would argue, over the past couple of years with Ukraine and now with Gaza.
Yeah, and with Gaza. You bring up people feeling good, yet concerned. You know, Reagan famously asked Carter, you know, in the debate with Carter, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? That's being talked about now. But Democrats will say, well, wait a minute. Do you want four more years of Trump? Because they'll bring up, you know, chaos that he had and, you know, all the tweets he used to do. And they think he's going to come back and go after people who've been going after him and his legal cases. I mean, it's interesting because we have a very unusual case. We're not turning the page to somebody new from President Biden if we vote him out of office. We're going back to the guy who was in office before him. Hasn't happened in a long time.
Yeah, the president did a rare interview this week. He did it with Univision, and he talked about Trump destroying democracy and eviscerating the Constitution. I believe that progressives and a lot of Democrats probably believe that.
They're afraid of him.
I don't believe that most Republicans and even the majority of independents do believe that. I don't believe they do. What I find on the inside for some of the polling and what I call the Magnificent Seven, in these polls, they've been somewhat consistent for the past month and a half or 2 months, and that shows Donald Trump with a slight lead. I don't know what that means. Yeah. I don't know if that holds throughout the summer.
Yes. I think some polls have given President Biden a little edge there.
I've seen a little bit of movement in the last 5 or 6 days, and we'll see whether it lasts. But I think if you're riding the poll numbers now, I think you're looking at the wrong thing. You know, there's so much that can change.
Polls are also unusual, Bill.
I don't know how Republicans go after this early voting issue, but they've made it pretty clear that they're gonna talk about it now. And I don't know how that translates, but look, it's April.
You mean you mean do more to get early voting,
encourage
their people to do, right,
to bank the vote.
Yeah, because you know, 4 years ago that was a big thing. Republicans didn't want to do that, but I think a lot of Republicans, well, we have to play the same game as Democrats in order to beat them.
Listen, I think they're fools if they don't play by the current state laws in these key battlegrounds.
Whether it's mail-in or whatever.
Whatever the rules are, you have to push for it. Otherwise, you're just going to keep losing, period.
And the polls are also interesting. There's a Fox poll that has former President Trump ahead of President Biden among voters under 30 by almost 20 points. So there's another poll by Quinnipiac that has just the opposite, where Biden's ahead of Trump
Another good reason not to pay attention to
it. So I don't know, but
I do trust our polling, however. Go ahead.
If our polling is accurate, where the former president leads with young voters, that's not something Republicans have done traditionally. The former president has, in some polls, appeared to have some more support among Black Americans or Hispanics, too. So maybe he's making some inroads that will really help in November.
Could be, and maybe that's a reflection of how people feel about the economy again. I thought there was a really interesting piece. I read it about a week ago. It was in the Financial Times. And they looked at all the waves of immigration that have come into the United States, going back to the 1800s now. And he made a very interesting point that maybe is applying right now, whether it's African Americans. If this support is real now, if it is, by the way, it's, you know, Georgia's gone. You know, Joe Biden does not have a shot of winning Georgia if those numbers are legit. They talked about Hispanics in America, and where the generations change and they grow more conservative. I don't know if he's right, but he made a very interesting point.
Now we have a president in Joe Biden who Republicans blame for the border situation, illegal immigration. He might do an executive order at some point to try to stem the tide. That issue is going to be an issue, it seems like, all the way into November. How many people do you think will vote on that issue?
I think a lot. I got to tell you this. I think this issue really it came out of nowhere, and it immigration especially, it just spread all over the country. And I think a lot of people think about it right now. You know, whether or not you're gonna have an open line. because it, in a lot of ways, you know, we look at our live shots down there, and it's not a border. It's not even a fence. It's just people crossing. And we had a fellow on this week from San Diego. He's a county executive down there, and he said the intent now, because the laws are the way they are, is that those crossing the border would see the Border Patrol and run the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Now they see the Border Patrol and they run to them.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you do that is because you want to be apprehended. Let you know, you get your court day that comes 5 years from now.
And you're just let in.
Now you're in the country. So, you know, what Abbott did in Texas, like it or not, you know, what DeSantis did in Florida, like it or not, it grabbed headlines. And there's still a lot of programs now where they're flying a lot of migrants into the country. We report on it. A lot of others don't. It's really popping up there on the issue scale for immigration among Americans and what they think we can do. You know, when Trump was talking about that wall in 2016, a lot of people thought he was nuts.
Yeah. And, well, you know, a lot of mocking him, Mexico's going to pay for it.
A lot of Republicans, they were thinking he was nuts. And now it's become... It's become an acceptable argument, where in 2016 and 17, frankly, it wasn't.
In 2016 and in 2020, we didn't have abortion to the degree we have it now. It's the number one issue for Democrats. Arizona this week, you mentioned it, is a state that's a battleground state. Arizona this week, the Supreme Court there upholds a law from 160 years ago.
1864.
Banning almost all abortions, even in cases of rape and incest. Even Republicans want that law off the books. Can Democrats overcome the Biden economic issues, the border issues, and win on that issue?
They might. I don't know. And I think it's like sports. It's why you play the games. It's why you vote, and it's why you hold elections. I think it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch. And we'll see, you know, if it will pull out voters. I just don't know how many. And I don't know how it's offset by, you know, where inflation is then, where the economy is then, or where immigration is then. I don't know.
But former President Trump has had struggles in the polling with, say, suburban white women, right? Mm-hmm. You've seen that. You do with election night coverage. You go up county by county on that map. There are some voter blocks that are difficult for him. Does that make it harder for him, the abortion issue, with some women voters?
It could. And, again, that's why they vote. There are seven counties that surround Pittsburgh, Allegheny County. They're not all suburban. They tend to be rural also. They tend to offset the vote inside Pittsburgh. They can. It's possible. There are four counties that surround Philadelphia. The city of Philadelphia goes big for Democrats.
Sure.
You know, maybe those other four offset that. I don't know. But if we find what I saw in 2016, and I still think it's the case today, Northeastern Ohio is my state. That's where I'm from. And when I saw these counties in Northeastern Ohio flipping red in 2016, I said, man, he's got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Those people haven't changed. They're still there, and we're about to find out whether or not they come out in bigger numbers than before.
We're about 30 weeks away from it all. We have a lot of time, and who knows what will come up until then. Bill Hemmer, co-anchor of America's Newsroom, 9 to 11, Monday through Friday on the Fox News Channel. Great to talk to you. Thank you.
Dave, nice to be with you.
The Will Kane Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Kane as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Starting April 15th, the Fox News Podcast Network launches a new fast-paced daily quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Play, share, and of course, listen to The Quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Senator Rand Paul with your Fox News commentary coming up.
9 days before a key U.S. surveillance tool expires, it's in limbo. The House blocking an effort to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, designed to allow surveillance of non-U.S. citizens abroad without a warrant. Critics, including the American Civil Liberties Union, say it's also allowed the FBI to search collected data for information on Americans. Reauthorization failed to clear a procedural hurdle yesterday.
For all of us that wish to protect our country, we know first and foremost we must protect our civil liberties. or there is no country to protect.
Texas Congressman Chip Roy, one of 19 Republicans voting against it, many of them members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, including Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry, who read from the Constitution's Bill of Rights, highlighting the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures.
It doesn't say, well, if we've got an important matter, we can violate it. If it's too difficult, if it takes too long, Mr. Speaker, we can violate it. It doesn't say that. It says it shall not be violated.
The vote coming just hours after former President Trump posted "Kill FISA," blaming the law for an FBI probe of his 2016 campaign. But the House bill includes a number of reforms, two Trump administration officials calling it the single largest overhaul to the FBI in nearly 20 years. Former Attorney General Bill Barr and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo writing in a Fox News op-ed that it would directly address FISA abuses, in part by slashing the number of FBI personnel who can authorize a query about a U.S. person, also prohibiting the use of political opposition research and media reports to secure a FISA order, the way the infamous Steele dossier was used. Critics want more, arguing a warrant should be required to access surveillance data on Americans. Texas Republican Congressman and retired Navy SEAL Dan Crenshaw sits on the House Intelligence Committee.
If you gut FISA, if you make FISA unworkable or let it expire, you are seriously endangering our nation. A mass amount of our intelligence about what our foreign adversaries are doing and terrorist plots around the world want to do here, a mass amount of that comes from FISA-derived intelligence.
In excerpts of prepared remarks for a budget hearing today, FBI Director Christopher Wray will tell House lawmakers Section 702 is an absolutely indispensable tool and critical in securing our nation at a time when he says we need all the tools, people and resources to tackle elevated threats and keep Americans safe.
I mean, I think it's pretty important.
Dan Hoffman is a three-time CIA station chief, senior executive clandestine services officer and Fox News contributor.
And I think you've heard the director FBI Christopher Wray talk about that. The value of this program as a vital tool to hunt down al-Qaeda and ISIS, to detect Chinese spying and fentanyl crossing our border. There's a lot of value there, and I don't think there's any debate about that among our elected representatives.
The debate really comes in terms of how it's used, right? And in particular, what happens when data from Americans is swooped up as part of the collection of surveillance on foreign targets, right? Does this really come down to a debate about Americans' data and rights?
Yeah, I think that's true. It's all about connecting foreign threats to the homeland. And so, of course, there will be Americans who potentially could be caught up in that collection. It could be Chinese, for example, trying to spy on a private sector company, an American company. We don't want to be blind to that, and we want to be able to warn those Americans of the threat they're facing. It could be an American unknowingly in contact with a sleeper cell from ISIS who might be seeking to conduct a terrorist attack. Again, we want to be able to warn the American. The key thing, at least from my perspective, because there's some elected representatives who are concerned about collection on Americans, there have been a number of, I would say, measures that the FBI has taken. They have to have justifications for every search they make. They've had additional training in how to conduct appropriate searches. There's an attorney's approval required whenever you're looking at over 100 names. And then most importantly, there's congressional oversight. I don't know that the Congress needs to turn this over to the judiciary, because if we need a warrant every single time an American is potentially caught up in some collection, you're going to lose time. And intelligence threats like Chinese spying or an al-Qaeda terrorist attack, that's not like fine wine getting better with age. We don't have days, weeks to wait for the process of a warrant. But what we do have are our House and Senate intelligence committees, judiciary committees. They can provide the necessary oversight of the FBI. And there's a record for every one of these searches. And there's an ability to determine whether there are any abuses. And I think that's the critical element here.
There were some reforms proposed to the existing law, especially Section 702. Those reforms were part of a reauthorization effort that has so far been blocked, at least temporarily, in the House. And part of the sticking point was that it did not include a warrant requirement. Is there any way to bridge the gap on that? Is there some sort of nuanced way to include that wouldn't be as cumbersome as you're describing it for the investigative process?
I know that's been a discussion between, you know, Republicans on the Intel Committee and some of the Freedom Caucus members. So they're going to hash that out themselves. Again, for me as a U.S. citizen, I am perfectly comfortable without requiring a warrant, with having oversight. And then the things I mentioned about justification for every search, there's a record for every search, there's training for the FBI. Sure, if you want to go completely to one end of the spectrum and have zero collection, okay, but then we're going to be blind to foreigners trying to do us harm. So I'm sorry we have to give up a little bit of that, but I trust the FBI and I trust our congressional oversight to ensure that there will be no abuse of this capability. Look, we've got intelligence services, we've got police department, there's, you know, state, federal, local law enforcement. These are things that we need to have to protect ourselves from those who wish to do us harm. And so, you know, that's if you had unlimited liberty, in other words, no collection whatsoever on Americans who might be caught up in a network of Al-Qaeda terrorist attack or Chinese spying, then we're going to open up ourselves to potential attacks in our country, and we can't have that. So it's a good debate. It's been a debate that I think has been worth having. But even, you know, Speaker Johnson wrote a letter to his fellow congressmen and women last week and said that FISA, Section 702, have been essential, I'm quoting him, to intercepting communications of dangerous foreign actors overseas, understanding the threats against our country, countering our adversaries, and saving countless American lives. That's what he's saying. I 100% agree with that.
FISA was first created, actually, back in 1978, and then expanded in 2001, right, as part of the Patriot Act. What happened before 1978? Were, you know, the threats just different then, obviously? And then also, you know, intelligence gathering was different. You know, was this necessary in order to evolve as threats evolved? Or, you know, what is the worst case scenario if we go back to zero collection?
I don't think any of us wants another 9/11 terrorist attack in our country. So if we deprive ourselves of valuable collection, which has grown commensurate with our technological advances over the past decades, then we leave ourselves wide open to attacks in our country. And I just don't think we want to be doing that. Our sources and our methods have become more and more sophisticated over the years. There are all kinds of rules and procedures and laws governing how intelligence agencies engage with American citizens. Or collect on American citizens. And that needs to keep a pace with the value of the collection itself, which we desperately need. That we are facing more threats today than we were in 1978. We are facing a wickedly complex array of threats to our national security that we weren't facing back then. Growth of transnational terrorism, China, Iran, North Korea nuclear program, Russia interfering in our elections, drugs pouring across our border. You know, these are things that we need that additional collection for. And again, I think that with the modifications that we've already seen and the oversight, I think Congress is in a position to see how things go in the coming years and determine whether additional measures might or might not be necessary.
How concerned are you that politics may be overshadowing this debate now, especially in light of what happened with former President Trump's 2016 campaign aide and the surveillance that was done there? Is there a danger that there's, you know, too much of an emphasis now on the whole political atmosphere surrounding this?
Well, I think it's natural that there's politics involved and there's going to be political debate about this program, and it's highly charged from that 2016 presidential campaign. You got the whole issue of Carter Page and what he had to go through. But I think that that's where, again, the oversight's important, to hold anyone accountable for whatever instance we see where they didn't follow the rules and the procedures, or they broke the law. That's the case for anybody. Any of that can happen from any of our civil servants or elected officials. We've had senators and congressmen, a number of them, recent examples, who broke the law and are paying the price for it. And so that's what our system of checks and balances enables. And as a citizen, I'm comfortable with that.
What would you say to other American citizens who are perhaps more concerned than ever about national security and about the intelligence community?
Well, look, I think U.S. citizens should understand that there are a lot of hardworking, dedicated American patriots who go to work every day in the intelligence community to try to detect threats and preempt them before any harm is caused to our homeland or to U.S. citizens globally. That's what we do every day. And most of those people could be doing other things, but chose to serve their country. And so the problem for our intelligence community is that, as one of my old bosses at CIA used to like to say, the secret of our success is the secret of our success. People don't know what we do because it's secret, and they don't know all the successes we have. They don't know necessarily all of the, and nor do they want to know, you know, all the Al-Qaeda terrorists we've taken out. To me, the real silver lining in all of this discussion about the FISA surveillance is we're having this discussion openly, and Americans are free to express their views. They're free to contact their congressmen and congresswomen and express whatever concerns they have or support or lack thereof. And that's a great example of how our democracy serves our citizens most effectively.
Former CIA station chief and Fox News contributor Dan Hoffman, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Meet the American who
led 77 Minutemen against 700 Redcoats in the Battle of Lexington. Captain John Parker was born in Lexington on July 13, 1729. Some of his ancestors had arrived in the Massachusetts Bay Colony as early as the 1630s, with his family roots running deeper than the U.S. Parker earned his military training in the French and Indian War. However, experts note there is no documented evidence of his service. He allegedly trained with Rogers Rangers, a group of New Hampshire soldiers instructed in irregular warfare, with the U.S. Special Forces tracing its roots to the group. He was elected captain of the local militia, the Lexington Training Band, known as the Minutemen in popular lore. The group consisted of farmers, blacksmiths, cordwainers, and wagon makers, with most of the men in the group being distant cousins. On April 19, 1775, Parker, 45 years old and riddled with tuberculosis, stood on Lexington Common along with 77 armed Americans and faced off against 700 British regulars, highly trained soldiers determined to squash the colonial rebellion. The shot heard around the world at Lexington Common ignited the American Revolution. Nearly one-third of the men who stood on the Common that morning would perish by the end of the day. Before the Redcoats began their march towards Concord, thousands more Minutemen from across Massachusetts made their way to the area to defend the budding nation. Captain Parker succumbed to his tuberculosis on September 17, 1775, at 46 years old. His heroics gave rise to the Declaration of Independence the following year.
This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by the founder of the Stewart Group, my very good friend, Don Stewart. We'll discuss student loans, abortion, inflation, and much, much more. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Rand Paul.
What's on your mind?
How vast was the great COVID cover-up? Well, my investigation has recently discovered government officials from 15 different federal agencies knew in 2018 that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was trying to create a coronavirus like COVID-19. These officials knew that the Chinese lab was proposing to create a COVID-19-like virus, and not one of these officials revealed this scheme to the public. In fact, 15 agencies with knowledge of this project have continuously refused to reveal any information concerning this alarming and dangerous research. Government officials representing at least 15 federal agencies were briefed on a project that was proposed by Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology. This project, the Diffuse Project, proposed to insert a furin cleavage site into a coronavirus to create a novel chimeric virus that would have been shockingly similar to the COVID-19 virus. For years, I have been fighting to obtain records from dozens of federal agencies relating to the origins of COVID-19 and the Diffuse Project. Under duress, the administration finally released documents that show that the Diffuse Project was pitched to at least 15 different agencies in January 2018. What does this mean? It means that at least 15 federal agencies knew from the beginning of the pandemic that EcoHealth Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology were seeking federal funding in 2018 to create a virus genetically very similar, if not identical, to COVID-19. Disturbingly, not one of these 15 agencies spoke up to warn us that the Wuhan Institute of Virology had been pitching this research. And now we know that 15 agencies heard the proposal. And when each agency discovered that COVID-19 was strangely similar to the diffuse proposed virus creation, not one agency head stepped forward to warn the public that the virus might be man-made and therefore already adapted to transmit freely among humans. Not surprising to some of us, Fauci's NIAID was not only briefed on Wuhan's desire to create this virus, NIAID was actually listed as a participant in the initial diffuse pitch. These documents also reveal that a scientist whose lab has received millions of dollars from EcoHealth was also part of the original plan to create this chimeric coronavirus. This researcher, Ian Lipkin, also later became one of the authors of Proximal Origins, a journal paper commissioned by Anthony Fauci and NIH head Francis Collins to throw shade on anyone arguing that the virus might have come from the lab. We only know of this diffuse proposal because of a whistleblower, one brave Marine, Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Murphy, who came forward with the truth. Shame on all those who covered up the diffuse project. Of course, they all should be punished, but likely won't. At the very least, though, the perpetrators should be made to admit the truth, and Congress should finally put in place sufficient oversight to make sure dangerous gain-of-function experiments are sufficiently vetted and, if necessary, prevented. This is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.